Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 2nd, 2003. Today's session is entitled Healing Through Witness and Service, Session 2 of Healing of Our World with John Leonard. Number LEJ 2003-02. Let's listen in.
My name is John Leonard, and I'm talking on the theme for the year, the healing of our world, and I'm doing it bit by bit, the little things we can do, and I'm basing it on parts of the Sermon on the Mount, and it's actually based on a book I'm writing, and I'm telling stories. Basically, I'm telling stories. But yesterday, I handed out, anyone not here yesterday? Okay, I handed out a questionnaire. And I said at the end that I would we'd get to it today because yesterday I talked too much. So today we're going to have you talk and you explain things. Were you here yesterday?
No.
Okay, then I'll give you a questionnaire too. So the questionnaire was on the Beatitudes. And okay, and the questions were to grade yourself on the Beatitudes, and then if you can think of a person who lives out that Beatitude, to write the name in. If you're like me, finding a person who lives out the Beatitude is harder than doing the grading. Doing the grading was not too hard, but the person, you know, I could have said Mother Teresa for all of them and left it at that. I thought of her actually for Blessed Are the Merciful.
But finding a person.
Yes.
Was that?
Pardon?
A person that we know personally, or is that
it can be,
some far off figure?
No, I normally I would do it with a person I know, and I think that's really important. Yesterday I said that I graded myself highest on Blessed Are the Poor in Spirit, and lowest on Blessed Are Those Who Suffer Persecution. And when I said I graded myself highest on Blessed Are Those Who Are Poor in Spirit, I explained that I was an alcoholic and that when I went to treatment, I came up with the realization that that first beatitude, blessed are those who know their need for God, really fit. And in a sense, I've looked upon my alcoholism, which is still what I have, as a blessing, though it was certainly a curse for the number of years I drank. And I thought of a story, which I did not tell you yesterday. Fancy that, a story. It's a story of a water carrier in Africa, and he'd take two, he had a big pole, and he'd have a big jug here and a big jug here, and he'd go down to the well, which was about a mile and a half from the village, and he'd fill up the jugs, great big water jugs, and then he'd tie them to the pole, and he'd get the pole up on his shoulders, and he would walk slowly, slowly, slowly back to the village. And when he got to the village, he would empty the big pitchers into this common container so the people would have water. Well, one of the big containers had a crack in it. And so one was full, and he'd pour that in, and the other one, he'd just have a little bit of water left, and he'd pour that in. So one day when he was down at the well, the one with the crack in it turned to the water carrier and said, "You need to get rid of me because I don't carry the water. I've got this terrible fault and it's this crack, and so most of the water leaves before you get back to the village and all your labor is in vain." And he said, "I want you to look when we go back this time." So they walked back and they stopped, and there was this little pool of water here and birds were feeding in the water. And he said, "That came from you." And further along, they went up, and there was this whole garden of flowers all the way along the path. And the water carrier stopped, and he said, "That water came from you." And then he turned to the big pitcher, and he said, "What you consider a fault might be a virtue." And I think that can be true. Our weaknesses can become our strengths, a source of strength. Well, I want to start off then with seeing if any of you are willing to share your highest and lowest, and if you came up with a person, what you came up with. And I already told my cousin, since he's leaving today, that I was going to start with him. What was your highest and what was your lowest? And did you put me down for all eight Beatitudes?
My dog ate my homework, teacher.
Did you have a high one?
Yeah, I did. Blessed are the poor in spirit. I made it 4. The person I put down is Pope John Paul.
For poor in spirit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you want to share your weakest one or not? No need to.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I made myself lowly.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else want to share their high or low or a person that lives out the Beatitude? Don't all jump in at the same time. What did you grade yourself highest on, or what did you grade yourself lowest on? Many of us are more than willing to share our lowest, but not willing to share our highest, I think, if you're like most people I've talked before.
My lowest was blessed are the meek. Because I said, how well do you listen to others and to God? Are you comfortable letting others take the lead, yet willing to speak when something important has to be said? I'm making progress, but that's still my lowest. I think I'm not as good a listener as I could be.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Well,
yeah.
I rated myself pretty high on blessed are the peacemakers. Are you a bridge builder? Are you one who can reconcile differences and build consensus? Are you called upon to bring unity where there's been friction? And that was essentially my normal application.
Great.
Was doing that, and I got pretty good at it.
Good.
But my weakest now is a 1, and it's blessed are the pure in heart. Are you in touch with your deepest desires? I don't really know the answer.
That's my lowest also.
Thank you for your honesty. Yes. Did you have a person that you found that exemplified any of the Beatitudes? That's hard. That is hard.
Why don't you start?
I put down a person, the same person, for 3 of them.
Oh, my.
Those who mourn and those who hunger and thirst for righteousness and peacemakers. And he is the interim pastor who just completed his stay with my congregation.
And where's that?
Ellensburg, Washington.
Ellensburg, okay,
right.
Great.
No.
Thank you. Anyone else want to share highs, lows, or a person?
I can mention two.
That's Mark.
I'm not sure if it's on the sheet, but blessed are those that mourn.
That's on there.
2 years ago, 3 of my brothers had passed on and ended up, it was a very trying time for us as in our native community. The whole community is involved with the family that deals with death, and they ended up, for us in our native community, it ended up I'm glad that I have my native community that was my strength for that time. And dealing also with our community, blessed are the poor, even though many of our native communities are have many of the lowest incomes, but ended up we also have the highest joys as being a very close-knit tribal community.
Okay.
As a group.
What tribe is this?
Skokomish.
Skokomish? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone not have that questionnaire?
I don't, but I remember mine, John.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I'll just look at
it. Now, today, salt and light, which is witness and service. So healing our world through our witness and our service. And I'd like to read that little section because it is little. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. And our prayer this morning will be a song. What I would like you to do now before I start talking about salt and light is write on the back of those pages, and if you need some paper, I'll give you some. If you need a pen, I'll give you some. Write down someone who has been light or salt for you and what they have done. And then if you can think of it, write about a time you have been light or salt and what you have done. Does that make sense? Anybody need paper or pen?
I need a pen.
I got pens, thanks to... Okay, pen. There you need. Paper two, okay. You can have... You were here yesterday. Okay, and we need paper. Okay. I'll give you a little bit of time to think of people who have been salt and people who have been light and how you've been that, if you have. So this time you're talking first, not me. So, who has been salt or light, or how have you been salt or light? Do I have anybody brave enough to answer? Oh, I got all kinds of people! Good! Ladies first.
I actually put salt to me, and I've been salt to a very long time friend, and to a spiritual friend that I have, and my brother.
Pardon?
My brother.
and your brother.
And Light has been this spiritual friend, our priest in Helena, and we've moved since then. And where I am, we have a group that meets every Monday afternoon to study the lessons for the next week. And I put that whole group as Light.
Yeah. Great, great. Thank you very much. Yes?
Well, I have a former pastor who was our pastor at the time of the breakup of the Missouri Synod.
Uh-huh.
And people, you know, there were two sides, and the other side, you know, I'm sorry, called us names, you know, Bible doubters and all this kind of stuff, and yet Carl never had a harsh word for them. He just says, I think there's a different way to worship God. And so we broke away from our parent congregation and set up another congregation. Yeah. And to me, that was a great way to handle a very difficult situation.
Right.
Was just to say, hey, it's not, we're not going to condemn them or speak harsh of them, but we'll, there's a different way. And all those that want to believe in that way, let's join together.
Great. Thank you. You had your hand up, okay?
Oh, I was just going to say, as I was trying to think of a time that I've been Light, it occurred to me that I'm probably more often Light when I don't realize I'm being Light.
Mm.
When people have come up to me and said, weeks after the fact, you know, what you said in whatever setting was really helpful to me or pointed me towards God. It's the time when I think I'm being Light that I get really off track.
Very good and very true. Okay. Thank you. Katie?
Okay.
This is my sister-in-law.
I observed something that was really beautiful when I was working with older people, and in their passing, in their last minutes, the ones that had total faith were beautiful. Their families were beautiful. The ones without faith, it was just tragic. I mean, you could feel the difference, the Light. I mean, it was a wonderful lesson to me.
So those who face death with faith.
Uh-huh, are beautiful. Yeah. They really are.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyone else, Light or Salt? Examples.
My Light had to be my grandfather. He was a... Well, when he lived with my family, which he did most of my early days anyway, he was a widower, but he was an LDS bishop, and just a wonderful guy, and certainly I think left me with, I hope, some good traits.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much. Anyone else here on Light or Salt? Who's been salt or light to you? Yeah, Lila.
I put my kids, because I think Karen and Jason seasoned my life. Certainly seasoned my life. Salt and peppered my life. I think they really have been salt and light for me, and I feel really blessed with that. And when I think of who I'm probably light to on a kind of on a pretty steady basis would be my sister Beverly, and she's light to me. So it's really back and forth. It's we are light for each other, you know. And I really appreciate that. So I think when it's reciprocal, it has a real special meaning. When I'm light for someone, and they're light for me.
Great. Okay. Thank you. That's my wife. Okay. And you had your hand up, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay.
I was the teacher aide, and there was a girl who whose father had begun drinking, and she was about to graduate, and he was also sexually abusing her. And so I asked if she had anybody around in her, from her family that could take her in And it turned out that she told her aunt about what was going on, and her aunt got her out of that situation. And at graduation,
anyone else, salt or light in your life? Okay, if you put down a person for salt or light, I'm going to give you a challenge. Tell that person. Mm-hmm. Tell that person. How often have we told people, you really lit up my life? You know, not too often, probably. Okay, so now I'll tell you my stories. I have a few stories. Every now and then I get stories. But I want to start off with a prayer. When I was writing this part of my book, I started praying on salt and light. And yesterday I told you I was in the Jesuits for 17 years. And St. Ignatius, who was the founder of the Jesuits, talks about using your imagination in prayer. I'll talk about this when I talk about prayer. So I wanted to use my imagination in prayer, so I imagined that I was salt. And people were having a barbecue, and they put the salt on the steaks on the barbecue. And the steaks were done to perfection. And then the people sat down and they ate. And not one person said how good the salt was. Salt is a powerful, powerful image. The only time we usually taste it is when there's too much of it. It's there to enhance. And so I thought, when I thought of this in image of salt, or I used to say to the kids in school, I said, how many of you go into a room and turn on the lights and then look up at the lights and say, wow, what a neat light? No, the light's there to let you see things. And how many of you put salt on, you know, and say, how good the salt was? Well, I saw that in my imagination. No, it's a beautiful image for what we are to be as servants and witnesses. But not the focus of attention. If we're a witness, we're pointing to something else. If we're serving people, we're serving them. And as you said, I may not even know I'm doing it. And it reminded me of the story I told you yesterday, for those who were here, about the man who was very holy and had to ask God for what he, you know, for some gift. And he didn't want the power of healing because that belonged to God, and didn't want the power of forgiveness because that belonged to forgiving sins, that belonged to the angels. But he said, what I want is something that I do good, but I don't want to know about it. And so what the angels gave him was the power that when the sun was in front of him and his shadow was behind him, that wherever his shadow went, things came to life. People who were disturbed or sick got healed. But he never knew about it. He never knew about it. Okay, I'd like to talk about people who've been light and salt for me. Yesterday, I also talked about how 2 Isaiah was very important to me, Isaiah 40 to 55. And in Isaiah 49:6, part of 2 Isaiah, it says, I will make you a light to the nations. And then Matthew, who writes for Jewish Christians, takes up this theme, I will make you a light to the nations. And so I thought to myself, who has been salt and who has been light for me? First of all, salt. I was in the Jesuits and I was in philosophy, and you could either get a master's in philosophy or you could work towards a master's in some other subject. So I decided that I wanted to major in history. So I was working for my master's in history. And I had a teacher, and he was an old Jesuit priest, and his name was Doc Davis. And one day he said to me, he says, John, he says, there's a book I think you ought to read. And I was always looking for a good book to read. And so I said, well, what is it? And he says, Arthur Rimbaud in Abyssinia. Arthur Rimbaud was a French poet, and he lived for a while in Abyssinia. And he gave me the book to read. Well, he never ever realized the effect that book had on me. I read the book Arthur Rimbaud in Abyssinia. Abyssinia is now Ethiopia. And I fell in love with Africa. And I started reading everything I could read about going to about Africa. And then I wrote the provincial, who was the head of the Oregon province, and I said, when I go out to teach, after 7 years, you go out and teach for 3 years in the Jesuits, when I go out to teach, I would like to go to Africa, though we didn't have a mission in Africa. But I would really like to go in Africa. The year before I was to go out to teach, the Oregon province was asked to help the Polish Jesuits in northern Rhodesia. And so again, I wrote the provincial and said, wow, I'm ready, I'm ready. And so the next year, I was one of two of the first scholastics, these who are not ordained, to go off and teach in Africa. All because of a teacher who had no idea what he was doing when he gave me this book, Arthur Rimbaud in Abyssinia. But the effect was it opened my mind to a whole people, a whole continent, and I loved all the time I was in Africa. All of it. There was a man who was salt and didn't realize it. I'll give you an example of salt where I didn't realize it. I was born in Spokane, Washington, in Sacred Heart Hospital on September the 21st, 1937. You can figure out how old I am. On the very same day, in the very same hospital, there was a guy named Martin Ota, Japanese-American, born. So Martin and I were born the same day in the same hospital. And then in fifth grade, I transferred to Sacred Heart School in Spokane. And one of my classmates was Martin Ota. And we became kind of good friends. Well, I graduated from high school in 1955, and we had our 25th reunion. We hadn't had our 50th yet. 25th reunion in 1980. And I saw Martin, who still lives in Spokane. I saw Martin, and he came up to me, and he says, John, there's something I've been wanting to tell you for a long, long time. And I said, what, Martin? He said, well, do you remember in seventh grade? I can't remember even being in seventh grade. In seventh grade, you were captain of the football team. We had two football teams, and you had to pick members of the team, and you were one captain and this other guy was another captain, and you had the first pick and you picked me first. And he said, I had never been picked first for any sport in my life until that time, and you picking me first gave me the confidence to keep going in football. And it so happened that when he and I went to Gonzaga Prep, as obviously that was a reunion, and when he graduated his senior year in high school at Gonzaga Prep, he was all-city. He was an all-city lineman for the Gonzaga Prep football team. Do I remember ever picking Martin Ota for a football team? No. I never remember ever being the captain of a football team. And how I ever would become the captain of a football team is way beyond me. You know, I knew what a football was, and that was about it. But again, like you were saying, there you never know. And again, it comes back to that thing. You never know what effect we have. So be careful about what you do. And then light. People who have been light in my life. Again, a teacher. This time in high school. I had a teacher in high school who taught me 7 subjects. 3 years of debate. 2 years of Greek. 1 year of Latin. And 1 year of chemistry. 7 subjects. And his name was Jim Burns. And I just, you know, I bet you've all had teachers that you just clicked with. This was a teacher I clicked with. He was a Jesuit scholastic. That is, he was in that 3-year period, like when I went to Zambia or Northern Rhodesia at that time, the first time. He wasn't ordained. He later on became ordained. He came back and went to theology. But he was so lively and so friendly and so funny and so bright. He was, well, look at what he taught, Greek, Latin, and chemistry. Yeah. You know, you don't usually think of one person teaching Greek and Latin. Yeah, that's all right, but chemistry? And he was a great chemistry teacher. He was just brilliant. Well, he so affected me that I thought, I want to be like him. I want to be like him. And I knew I didn't have the intellect to be like him, but I appreciated how he went out to people, how he helped people, how he was so wrapped up in his life of service. I wanted to be like that. And so I entered the Jesuits. Graduated in 1955 from Gonzaga Prep, entered the Jesuits that September, and was in them for 17 years, as I said the other day. Another person who's been light in my life is in this room, my wife. Yesterday I talked about being alcoholic. When I was fired from my job and when I was told to go to treatment, my marriage had fallen apart. I'd been divorced for I don't know how long. I was living on my own. It's a lot easier to drink when you're on your own too. Boy, you can really drink, and I did. You know, I would have a martini in a glass that tall.
Oh my.
But that is oh my, yes. However, I once knew a priest who never found glasses big enough, so he used to have martinis in old sanctuary lamps. You know how big those are. Well, had I had a sanctuary lamp, I probably would have used it. But when I met Lila, we met by accident. We met at a common Thanksgiving dinner, and then we went out, and I was still drinking, but she never saw me drunk. Never saw me drunk. But this episode where I got too much to drink and called the student and then had to go to treatment, that took place when I was just beginning to know Lila. And when I think about her as someone who brought light to my life. When I was down at Sundown, north of Yakima, Lila came to visit me, and she brought a gentle light, like the gentle light of breaking dawn. And I could talk about something she did not know about until I had to tell her I was going to treatment, and she was understanding, and she gave me strength. And then last year, now some of you may have been here last year. Last year we were here for, I don't know how long, a week at least. And Nancy Reeves, anybody here, were here when Nancy Reeves was? Yes, Nancy Reeves was giving this class, you know, I do what you want, God, if I only knew what it was you wanted, you know. And it was on discernment. And I was in class and my wife was in class, and she would make really intelligent comments and would ask really intelligent questions, and I wanted to go, that's my wife! That's my... But I didn't. But I, you know, when you live with someone, sometimes you forget the light they shed on your life. And it was a moment like that that let me see, yes, she is light to my world. How do we bring light? Well, we have to see clearly and follow what we see. Now some regular stories, not personal stories. Master once went to his students and he said, how do you know when night is over and day has begun? One guy. When I can tell the difference between red and blue. No. When I can tell the difference between an oak tree and a maple tree. No. When I can see animals in the forest. No. So they all decided, we're never going to get this right. You know, he never asks a simple question. So they just were quiet, and they waited for the master to speak. And he did. When you look into the eyes of a man and see a brother, and when you look into the eyes of a woman and see a sister, then night is over and day has begun. But when you look into the eyes of a brother, of a man, and do not see a brother, and look into the eyes of a woman and do not see a sister, then you are still living in the night, no matter what time of the day it is. We've talked about people who've been light, who've been salt. There's a Hindu story that I absolutely love. Again, like I said yesterday, one of my favorite stories. And the story goes like this. There was this village, and in the middle of the village, there was this walled-in area. And no one knew what was inside the wall. You can tell it's a village filled with curious people. And it was there for years and years and years and years and years and even more years. But finally, a woman came along. She put a ladder next to the wall. She climbed up the ladder. She looked over the top of the wall and she said, and she took the ladder and jumped in. Well, people began to wonder what happened to this woman, but after a while that sort of faded away and she obviously disappeared, and no one still knew what was inside the wall, and years and years and years and years went by until what time a guy came by. We guys are slower than women. And put a ladder against the wall and climbed up the wall and looked over the top of the wall and went, took the ladder and leapt in. And he was missed for a while, but no one knew what happened to him, and they forgot about him. Years and years and years and years went by until another person came along with a ladder, and this person's sex shall remain unknown, and put the ladder next to the wall. And this person climbed up the ladder and peeked over the top of the wall and went, and there was the most beautiful garden that this person had ever seen. It had tropical and non-tropical plants. It had waterfalls. It had ponds. It was absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. And it was something to be shared. And this person climbed back down the ladder and went out to proclaim the good news of what was in the village to all of the people so they could share it. In the Hindu story, the two people who leapt into the garden are called mystics. And the person who comes back down the ladder and goes out and proclaims the good news is called a martyr. And the root meaning of martyr in Greek is witness. We are all called to be witnesses. But it's not easy. It's not easy. Not easy at all. There's a Northwest Native American story that is, again, one of my favorites. The story of creation. In the beginning, when the Great Spirit created the world, the Great Spirit created the globe and the water and animals. And then the Great Spirit gave to each animal a present that was neatly, neatly wrapped. And so the animals started to open up their presents. One of them opened up the present and whoa! Out came Mount Rainier. And another one opened up the present and whoa! Out came the North Cascades. And they opened up the presents and whoa! 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 Creation just sort of popped up all around them. All the beautiful things that we now see came out of these packages. All of the animals opened up their package but one. Seagull.
There's always one.
There's always one. And Seagull said, it's mine. I'll open it if and when I want. Yeah. Well, it soon became clear what was in Seagull's box because no one could see anything. And so they decided, we got to get Seagull to open up that box. Well, one day a mother deer was running through the woods and then decided to stop for a minute, and the little fawn was behind her and went right into the rear end. Well, that did it. That did it. The deer came back and called all the animals together and said, "We need to see where we're going. We need to get Seagull to open up its package." Notice I didn't say his or her package. So they decided to call upon Seagull's cousin, Raven. So Raven came down and they said to Raven, "You gotta get Seagull to open up its package." And Raven said, okay. Then Raven went out and started floating around, trying to sense where Seagull was, because it couldn't see. And when it sensed where Seagull was, it came down and lit right beside Seagull. Seagull, knowing that his cousin was tricky, had the package here and shifted the package to this wing. And as it did so, it picked up its right foot. Raven put a thorn underneath the foot. Seagull came down. "Ah! What's wrong, cousin?" Raven said. "There's a thorn in my foot! Get it out!" Raven thought for a while, and Raven said, "Well, I'd get it out, but I can't see anything, and I need something to help me see." And Seagull thought about it for a while and thought, "Oh, this is so painful." So Seagull opened up its box just a little bit, and out came the string of stars, and creation was illuminated by the stars, and Raven went, and Seagull said, my foot, oh yeah, yeah, the foot, okay. So Raven went down and put its wing on the thorn and pushed it in a little bit. "Ow!" said Seagull. And Raven said, "Well, I had enough light to find the thorn, but I didn't have enough light to tell whether I was pulling or pushing. I still need more light." And so Seagull thought about it, and it was really painful now. So then Seagull opened up the package a little bit more, and creation was illumined by the moon. And oh my gosh, this was phenomenal, Seagull thought. And then Raven thought, and Seagull said, the thorn, oh yes, the thorn, yeah, I'm ready. And Raven reached down and pushed the thorn all the way in, and Seagull dropped the box, and the lid flew open, and up came the sun to illumine the world. And Raven couldn't believe what light was like, and it's just like this. And Seagull said, the thorn! So Raven reached down and pulled the thorn out. "Ah," said Seagull. And this is why sometimes you will see seagulls standing on one foot to remind us how difficult it is to let our light out. And when I first heard that story, not too long afterwards, my wife and I went cross country and we were camping in Maine, and I got up early to take the sun rising over the Atlantic, and there was a seagull on one leg with the sun rising behind it. Look for a seagull on one leg, and let it remind you, it is not always easy to let our light out. And finally, one story and then one short thing. There once upon a time was a monastery. It was on a hill overlooking a valley. And the monastery was filled with monks, and the people in the valley would flock to the monastery to pray because they felt they could touch God there. And young men became monks, and it was just a flourishing thing. Well, as years and years and years went on, the fervor in the monastery diminished. Fewer people came there to pray. They couldn't sense God there anymore. Almost no men came to become monks. And the abbot, the head of the monastery, he didn't know what to do. He tried everything and nothing seemed to work. But he noticed that every now and then a rabbi would come by and camp in the woods next to the monastery. And whenever the rabbi was in the neighborhood, things in the monastery were better. So he thought, maybe I'll ask the rabbi. Now, he never talked to a Jew, let alone a rabbi. So with trepidation, he went out one time, and the rabbi had this cart, and he was lived in the cart pulled by donkeys. And he made a little gap, and he walked into the cart, and the rabbi was praying, and he was going like this in front of the Talmud. And so the abbot didn't know what to do, so he went like this with the rabbi. And when the prayer was over, the rabbi took off his prayer shawl, and the monk says, I have a question I want you to... Oh, no. No answering questions till we sit down and have tea, the rabbi said. So they sat down and they had tea. And then after they finished tea, the abbot finally got enough nerve to ask the rabbi, okay, here's what I want to ask. He said, we used to have this fervor in our monastery, and people would flock and pray with us, and young men would become monks, and it's just gone all downhill, and I don't know what to do. And the rabbi said, I will tell you, and what I tell you, you may only repeat once and never repeat again. Is that clear? Yes, rabbi, the abbot said. Go back and tell the monks the Messiah is in their midst. The abbot repeated, the Messiah is in our midst. Thank you. And he went back. And after evening prayer, he said, I have an announcement to make. I visited with the holy rabbi who comes by periodically, and he wants us to know that the Messiah is in our midst. Well, the monks went back to their cells to do the prayers on their own, and they go to bed. And Brother Bruno went back to his cell, and he thought about Brother George the cook, and he thought, could Brother George be the Messiah? God doesn't have that much of a sense of humor. It couldn't possibly be Brother George. But what if it is Brother George? So Brother Bruno started treating Brother George as if he were the Messiah. And Brother George thought about Brother Rudolph, who was the one who welcomed visitors into the monastery, and he couldn't stand Brother Rudolph. And so he thought, though, well, what if Brother Rudolph is the Messiah? Oh, my gosh. So every monk prayed the same way. What if so-and-so is the Messiah? And they began treating each other as if the other were the Messiah. Well, the warmth and presence of God returned to that monastery. And people flocked to pray there because they could sense the presence of God. And young men decided that they wanted to become monks because they treated each other as if they were the Messiah. When we experience the love of God through others, then we have an experience of my favorite artist, El Greco. One time, a person came to visit El Greco in his small house, and it was a beautiful, sunny, bright day, and he knocked on the door, and El Greco said to come in, and the man came into the house, and all the shades were pulled. And the visitor said, you've got to open up the shades and let the light in. And El Greco said, I don't want to diminish the light I find within. So as we leave today, let's look for the light we find within. And let's keep the words of this closing song in mind, because I think this song is all about light and salt, though the words light and salt are not mentioned. But the song is about the theme that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's down to their last dime. Somebody's running out of time. Not too far from here. Somebody's got nowhere else to go. Somebody needs a little hope.
As much to you as it spoke to me. Go and be salt and light. Thank you very much.
Thank you.